I think there are a lot of folks out there who, I don't know if they necessarily identify with the term multi-potentialite or if they feel like they ha also have collected a multitude of experiences, or if they feel like they're too much or too weird, or their creativity has not been celebrated in the places that they have worked. Or if they want to be starting their own thing on the side, or if they're founding something. And the way that I help them is I help them tap into how to tell their story, how to build the confidence to tell their story matters, and that the world is going to be excited to discover what they have to offer.
Welcome back to Tech Less, a podcast to help you feel less stressed and more focused to calm the chaos of consulting. Let's be inspired by the possibility that we can be happier by doing less in an industry obsessed with constant optimization. I'm your host, April Rest. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back, everyone, to the Tech Less podcast. I'm your host, April Rust, and today we're with our special guest, C. Real, who's a design generalist and authenticity coach who helps both brands and leaders tell their stories in a genuine and playful way. In a business world where authenticity and true human connection are rare elements, C. helps creatives, multi-potentialites, and anyone who feels too weird for the workplace, learn how to recognize and value themselves as pure gold. Ooh, I love that. Welcome. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Me too. Yeah, me too. Well, as I mentioned before, I think maybe a month or a few weeks ago when we were preparing for this, I was like, wow, that introduction is like, that's a lot in a good way. And I want to know, like, how did you get to this point where you're helping brands and leaders value themselves as pure gold? What is that like? What does that look like? What does that mean?
Well, first off, I want to reflect your words a lot in a good way because I think a lot of people feel like they're a lot in a bad way. And I love that you said a lot in a good way because I think that's the goal. People want to feel like everything that comprises their unique selves can be celebrated and shared and not hidden away, not compartmentalized in any way. So that's a journey I had to go on myself. I did not value the multitude of experiences I had collected over time in my career. I didn't have a linear career path. I thought that only a linear career path was the right way, was the accepted way. And every time I was changing companies or changing industries, which I did, I usually wasn't just moving over to a different, the same role within a similar industry. It was usually like a complete change because I was networking with someone and they had an interesting opportunity, or I was curious about something different because of skills that I was building in the background. And I had to tell my story all over again. And eventually I just got better and better through practice at finding the applicable skills and realizing that I had lived multiple lives, professionally speaking, and could have a lot of different perspectives to offer than just someone who had been, a rank and file this specific profession only.
And tell us, how does that play into your current work now, helping brands and leaders kind of celebrate themselves and yeah.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of folks out there who I don't know if they necessarily identify with the term multi-potentialite or if they feel like They ha also have collected a multitude of experiences, or if they feel like they're too much or too weird, or their creativity has not been celebrated in the places that they have worked, or if they want to be starting their own thing on the side, or if they're founding something. And the way that I help them is I help them tap into how to tell their story, how to build the confidence to tell their story matters, and that the world is going to be excited to discover what they have to offer. And it's, creating things, whether it's your life, whether it's your career through job crafting or career crafting, or creating a whole new vocational life for yourself through a side hustle or a startup, that is in line with your energy, your authenticity, your authentic self, and most importantly, your values. Because if you're not doing something in line with your values, it can be extremely draining. And having experienced that myself, I didn't realize how draining it was until I was on the other side of it.
Yeah, we could go into that first for so long. I'm curious what I think this is probably the first time I'm hearing the phrase multi-potentialite. Can you break that down for us?
Sure. So I think this term isn't widely circulated, maybe enough, but my experience with folks is that they'll say, "Oh, I haven't heard that word," and then I'll explain it and they'll say, "Oh, that's definitely me." So I think it's a more common phenomenon than maybe the word, the maybe the popularity of the word. But a multi-potentialite is someone who has insatiable creativity and curiosity, loves to learn about a lot of different things, is not satisfied just being in one discipline, maybe in school, maybe it started that far back, maybe had a lot of different hobbies, a lot of different pursuits, even a lot of different friend groups, because you didn't want to limit yourself to just one thing. Maybe you were the creative theater kid, art kid, but you also did sports, but you also did this other thing. And you had a lot of different things pulling your attention, pulling your time, and that energized you. And then you maybe struggled to pick a major or focus. And you were thinking, oh, I'm 18 years old. How am I supposed to decide what to do with my life? And maybe you have changed careers, changed jobs, changed industries a few times, kind of like I was describing my own journey a few minutes ago. And you might struggle to pigeonhole yourself, or you feel pigeonholed. You feel like you're limiting yourself if you have to describe yourself and define yourself as one thing, or you have to, take parts of yourself away and dim your light a little bit in order to apply for roles or speak about yourself in a professional context when there's so much more of you to offer, but you feel like, oh, is this going to confuse people? Is this going to overwhelm people? Or am I too much in a bad way? And so there's other terms for it that could be like, polymath is another term, or like a Renaissance person,
Oh, I
or
like that one. Renaissance. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you can have your Renaissance anytime. So yeah, even though the term is not that widely used, I find that a lot of people really resonate with it when I tell them.
Yeah, a lot of what you said resonated with me. I'm like, yeah, like I like to wear a lot of different hats. Like one of the reasons why I even have the podcast. And just like the journey from, when I was younger to now has definitely been a windy road. So yeah, that resonated with me a lot. So I mean, I think this concept of like the linear career path and the non-linear career path is something that I've seen a little bit, but not discussed too much. For those of us, or like for our listeners out there who do feel like what you were saying about being a multi-potential, I like that resonated with them. How might you encourage them to see that as a positive or see that as maybe an advantage in navigating their career, particularly in tech, where I think we're constantly getting this advice of like, you need to be known for one thing, or you need to have expertise in like this one thing and really be specialized. How might you encourage a multi-potentialite in that regard?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I see that. I hear that in tech a lot as well, and that has certainly frustrated me. But in my own experience, especially working in startups, the wearing multiple hats is far more valued and celebrated, and can help you grow and learn in a lot more ways, especially that willingness to try on new hats and learn different things. And I think that perhaps if you are very specialized in one area and you're in a startup and there is a lot of opportunity to do a lot of different things, that might cause some discomfort where, suddenly you have to do this whole different thing. And yes, like that could, you could figure that out because you're a smart person and it could be adjacent to the thing that you've spent many years doing, but that's going to be a muscle that you're going to need to work a little harder at than someone who has been working all of their muscles this whole time. And so I think just the curiosity that comes with being a multi-potentialite and the excitement that comes from going in many directions really lends itself to startup culture. I think where the struggle lies is going into a larger, more established organization with a larger org chart. And that's where you're really going to have to tell your story in a clear way and say, these skills that I picked up in this other discipline help me in XYZ way, where you're going to need to communicate that clearly. Like, you're looking for this. I actually got that in this job. And you need to spell it out for them because they're not going to figure it out just looking at your resume. And I actually saw an example from a career coach years ago that was like, if you really wanted to be super clear and spell it out, you make a table and you say, these are the items on the job description. This is how I meet them. This is exactly how I meet them. And depending on how linear the job is, that could be exactly what they're looking for. But I would say use that as more of a template. I think that might be a little too linear for some folks where it's just like, oh, this looks like an Excel sheet that got pasted into a cover letter. Some people might love that though. If you're going for a very analytical position, it's like, oh, this person got right down to business. That's great. But I think if you know yourself and you know that you are not, if you enjoy wearing a lot of hats and you're going for a role that is more specialized, check in with yourself and think like, well, am I actually gonna enjoy this? And maybe, I know, times are tough, the job market's tough, and sometimes we need to take a bridge job or do a job that's not the thing that we really, really want to do. But think about, is this role going to be something you're going to thrive in if the job focus is really narrow? Because if you love learning and if you love doing a lot of things, how long are you going to be enjoying, if this is a learning opportunity, then that's great. But how long are you going to be doing this job before you maybe get bored, especially if the departments are maybe siloed and you're not doing the interdepartmental collaboration that you might be used to in wherever you're coming from? That is the advice I would give to someone who is inclined to doing a lot of things, wearing a lot of hats, having a lot of different skills that they can use at their disposal in their job who might be going for something at a larger org that is more focused.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call out because I have to think that my experience was not unique in going from a smaller, more boutique consulting firm to a global integrator. I mean, I think I jumped from an organization of maybe 300 people at the time to 300,000.
Wow.
And I just think exactly like what you're saying with taking a look at maybe just not even the role itself, but the organizational structure. Because in a smaller place, at least with my experience, in the smaller company, I was able to wear a lot more hats, and that was really celebrated and it wasn't always expected, but it was celebrated. And whereas in the larger company, it was very much like you need to stay in your swim lane and almost was looked down upon or like hand slapped for wearing, other hats that might belong to a different department just have because of how siloed it was. And that was really hard for me to feel like, whoa, like the scope of my work or the scope of my role was so much broader before, and I was doing all sorts of different things, even within the role of like a project manager for Salesforce Consulting. It looked so different one company to the next based on how siloed they were and their culture. And oh, I love that. Yeah, I think that could be really helpful for some of our listeners out there, like trying to navigate and figure out like where is the place that they want to be for the next few years.
Thank you. Yeah. And I acknowledge that you're not always going to necessarily get a clear answer in the interview process, that you may have to do due diligence on your own. If it's a larger company, you could look on review sites like Glassdoor and Blind, but you won't always know what it's like till you land there on day one. So it is a chance you're taking. But you can also do some networking, maybe from former employees. If you look for them on LinkedIn, if you know anyone, if you have second connections, reaching out to those second connections because they, and those are known as like weak ties, right? So, like the weak ties, it's found that they do favors or, they'll help you out more so than someone who knows you personally.
Wow, I didn't
I
know
yeah,
that.
I forget where I heard that, but in a networking context, if you have like a second connection, they can, because there's it's like a strictly professional relationship. It's not going to be like there's, I feel like there's less emotions riding on it. And they can be, yeah. I'm sorry that I don't have more prepared as to why. I'd be happy to follow up with
No,
you
that's
and
okay. That's okay. I just thought that was
there
interesting. Like, I'd never heard that
is a
before.
reason. Yeah, there is a reason why, and it's not coming to me right now, but it's something about like just the nature of the relationship that if it's someone you know through someone else or someone you're not as connected to, like it's easier to facilitate an introduction or yeah, just a like connection to a company or something like that. They have no emotional obligation to you, so they're more likely to be honest. I think it's stuff like that. Yeah, I don't remember exactly what the reason
That's
was that I had read,
interesting.
but I can look into it more and I can share it with you later.
All good. All good. Yeah, I probably will Google that too. I'm very curious what that is about, especially because I'm really active on LinkedIn. And so I don't know. It's just good to know. Okay. So let's see here. I'm curious where you want to take this because I know we prepared different things. Do you have a preference?
I'll look at the questions. I love the flow of where this is going. I think this is really cool. Like where would you organically take this from here? And I can let you know if that sounds good. I love geeking out about this word culture stuff, to be honest with you. I think it's great.
I think I probably would either go like either more on like how can job seekers like evaluate whether the company and the role is like a place in which they can thrive, or maybe pivot more towards like the time management aspect. But I'm open.
I'm definitely, I love the idea of both, but I'm curious where it could go if we explore the how do you know if it's a place you can thrive?
Yeah, let's go down that path.
I'm going to go off of pure adrenaline because I haven't prepared anything for that. So I'm going to go off of instinct. And I think that's going to be my answer to that question too. I have some examples from life. So yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go down that path. So just taking us back to when you were talking about when you're looking at a role and that might be more specialized, like is it going to be something that you could actually thrive in? Let's broaden that out to the company. How might you encourage your clients or encourage multi potentialites to evaluate like whether they're gonna, whether that company is aligned with them or whether that role is a place maybe they can thrive in.
I think knowing yourself and knowing exactly what you're looking for is going to be helpful. I think making that really clear wish list. And I had a friend many years ago. She was a coworker who became a good friend. So I happened to know her through work context, but she taught me a really great exercise for figuring out how to find anything that you want in life but haven't found yet, whether it's a job, whether it's a friendship or romantic relationship, something that needs to be a good fit in order to work well. And it was the five needs and 10 wants. And so, acknowledging that you can't necessarily find everything in something you're looking for, especially in a tough job market. You make a list of your five needs, like these are non-negotiables in a job, in a work culture, and then your 10 wants, your 10 nice to haves. And if you have this list, you can be more careful about what you say yes and no to, because if you've been on a job search for a long time, and if you're unemployed, if you're coming from that place of I'm not leaving from another job. I need to find something with more urgency. That can sometimes hasten your decision, sometimes out of necessity, but it might, if you don't have that list, if you don't have that clarity, you might make a decision and not realize that some of the criteria of the job or of the work culture or of the structure or of something might not be exactly what you were looking for. And then those things that you compromised on will come back to bite you later. I can speak to this from personal experience, that I did compromise on things because there were things that I really, really wanted that the job met. But then there were like a couple of things that were no's, but the yeses outweighed the no's for me. But I think it goes back to like it has to be a hell yes with your body, or it's a hell no. And so check in also how it feels in your body. And if there's any hesitation, explore why. And you may not know exactly why, but if there's any hesitation, just sit with it. Like if you have time to respond to an offer for after a couple of days, or over a weekend, like take that time to really sit with it, journal about it, explore it, talk to people you trust. Don't let them make the decision for you, but just explore and make sure that this is a really good decision for you. And also, as I said before, do that due diligence as much as you can, knowing that you might not always get the clearest, most honest, most up-to-date answer. And the clearest answer is going to come from within you. So trust that first and foremost. And if you are someone who has any type of history or of trauma or anything like that, where you were taught not to trust yourself, that might take some extra work. But just know that your body's going to protect you from a bad experience, even if it seems really good on the surface. So sometimes that like really high paying job is going to come at a cost. I know that sounds ironic, but just understand what those costs are, and you know, maybe the really good job is right around the corner. So yeah, that's what I would recommend for folks assessing an opportunity. And it's hard because we don't know what is in the future, and it can be very hard to turn down something that seems really good and think, oh, well, I'm going to regret this. But it's better to turn down something that you're not sure about than take it and regret it and go down a path that ends up not being right for you. But also, everything is mostly undoable. So if you do, it's okay. But in order to save yourself some potential headache, I advise sitting with it, making sure it's a really good decision for you and for your body and for your nervous system.
Yeah, I love the like evaluate a decision based on how it makes me feel or like makes my body feel. And I'm really glad that you mentioned like if you've been taught or learned in whatever way or for whatever reason, like not to trust yourself, that that might require some work. Because I think that's something like I've spent a long time working through is I think it's only been, I don't know, like 2-ish years since I've really even realized like I have an inner voice, number one. Like she's there. And then I've spent the last 2-ish years trying to figure out like what is she actually saying versus like anxiety, like what might feel like my instinct, but is something else, or like an old protection mechanism that isn't serving me anymore. So I'm glad you mentioned that because I think for some of us, like the trust your gut just like isn't as simple as like we think it should be, or I think it should be. I don't know. I haven't talked to too many people about this, but like when people always tell me, like, just trust your gut, I'm like, well, I don't know what she's saying. Like, I have different things inside of me telling me different things. But I love that. And I love like getting very clear on the non-negotiables because, you know, they might have all of your nice to haves, but if they don't have three of your needs, it's like, well, you really need to take a look at that. Because just like you said, like I can't tell you how many times something has like appeared nice and shiny, but like, and maybe it's the logical thing to do. Like me and my boyfriend always get into this, like in a good way of he'll be like, you're going after this because you think it's the logical thing. But like I can tell that like that's not what like feels good to you, but you think you should be doing it. Anyway, I just see that like all playing back with like especially with the I was gonna say multi-passionites, the multi-potentialites. Is that something that you've seen like with your client base of like multi-potentialites feeling like they need to do like one particular path?
That's definitely happened to me, and I have heard stories from other people as well, just feeling that pressure that exactly what you were speaking to, that you need to kind of fall in line or do the logically reasonable thing and not follow your heart, follow your head instead. But I also love what you spoke to about having the multiple inner voices, including the voice of anxiety. And you don't know who the voice of reason is. You don't know who the voice of inner wisdom is, and having to tease that out through a lot of inner work. And if you haven't done that work, then it is confusing, and you don't know how to listen to yourself. You don't want to listen to yourself. You don't trust yourself because you don't know who's talking. And I imagine since you've done the work to find your inner voice, now your inner voice won't stop talking because it's like, oh, you're listening to me now. Yay.
Yeah, she's on one, but like it ebbs and flows. Like it really ebbs and flows, and it's like sometimes I neglect her, you know, and then I like default back to being unsure. And like I've been in therapy for how long? 4 years. Not that there's a timeline or like, of course I'm putting pressure on myself. I'm like, oh, I need to have that like fixed by now, but I think probably for me and maybe other people, it's a like a lifelong practice of like really being in tune with myself and spending time with myself and like honoring my own inner wisdom.
Yeah, it's an exciting journey, even though it's challenging. And it can be really rewarding to be more in touch with yourself. And the way it feels, again, the way it feels in your body, you can finally feel at home in yourself. And if you don't know what that feels like, that can be overwhelming. Like, I don't have to feel stressed all the time. Like, we weren't designed to feel that way. And so finally freeing yourself from that can just feel so incredible. And that can help us stay motivated to keep going. Although it can feel really overwhelming at the beginning of a journey like that, of like, oh, I've unpacked a little bit. It's like when you move into a new house, like you're moving into your body and you've unpacked one box, but there's like 50 boxes. How am I going to unpack all of this one box at a time, like
Box at a
anything else?
time. One box at a time. I'm like, well, when you put it like that, 4 years, I'm doing pretty good. But all good things. So tell me, like, how does this play in with your coaching programs?
Yeah, so there are a few different offerings, and I love connecting with leaders who either people who are in existing leadership roles or people who are emerging leaders or reluctant leaders, because sometimes I think those can be the best because they're compassionate. I have had a lot of conversations with folks who are like, oh, well, I don't know if I want to stay in IC or become a leader and manage people because I feel a lot of moral qualms about stepping into a leadership role where I'm going to have to hand down directives from management that I might not agree with. And my take on this is one, yes, I see that, acknowledge that, I understand the concern, but also there are a lot of people who are struggling to find safe workplaces where they can be themselves, where they can show up as themselves, where they can work as themselves. And for you to be concerned about taking that role is very understandable, but that taking that role could be incredibly empowering, not just for you, but for all of those people who need a safe manager. And so I would love to help safe managers feel empowered to create oases in the desert, of companies that, maybe their policies or their cultures are not necessarily the most open, the most whatever it is. Like, some companies are really great and the values from the top down are excellent, but not every company is like that. And if you find yourself in a company like this, you can, within your degree of influence, I think it depends on your rank, it depends on your position, it depends on a number of factors. But whatever the degree of influence that you have to affect change, you can create a safe space that allows the people who work in your department or in the section, whatever area of influence you have, to deliver their best work as their best selves. And that is so inspiring for me because I was that person, and the safe managers who appreciated me for my creativity, appreciated me for all of the things that I brought, and really celebrated me for that versus the managers that really looked down on me for those things, made such a difference. And those are the people, those are the managers that I look back on. I'm like, oh, like that person really influence the person that I am today and how I show up and how I show up to help other people. And, they were great mentors. And I want to say to those people who are reluctant to step into management, like you can do it. You will have challenging days. You will have frustrated days. You will have days where you want to scream into the void about the system that you're in. But you can also empower so many people who might then grow into the next group of safe and empowering managers. There's also a concept of lead from any seat that I love to talk about because I think, especially in startups, but I think, to some degree, wherever you are, you can affect change from wherever you are in your chart. And I think that comes from networking. I think it comes from building relationships with your team. I think it comes from having the ability to observe and be curious and explore and speak up with whatever degree of safety. And I acknowledge that privilege plays a factor in this as well. I think there are ways that folks can affect change from any position that they're in by employing different techniques to, realize the things that they want to see in the organization. That I think that another really exciting thing to me about multi-potentialites is they see what's possible. Another thing that I really has kind of been curious to me over the course of my career is, why do we celebrate the things about leaders that we really kind of we see as detractors in employees? So leaders are curious, leaders are innovators, leaders love to change things, leaders love to build things. And so, we have a lot of founders who are visionaries. We have a lot of company figureheads who talk about the vision and talk about cool things they've created and how we're going to change things and move things forward and move the needle and all of that business speak. But if someone wants to do that within their department and all the ways of how things are done are very established, oh no, you're ruffling feathers. Oh no, you can't do that. Please get back in your place, get back in your cubicle. No, this is chaos. And so it's striking a balance between how, if you are a born visionary, how can you see the inefficiencies and how can you see where things can go and maybe affect some of that change without overturning the apple cart? And that's leading from any seat.
I love that. So helpful. Let's see here. Is that something that you help like with your coaching offering? Is that something that you help with or?
Yeah, so there's customized one-to-one leadership coaching called Follow Your Own Lead, and that is for leaders like this who want to work on any of these things. But there are also group offerings, not just for leaders, but for anybody. And the offering that kind of started it all is where the name Cultivate Your Weirdness is kind of associated with is the weird process, and that's for making a change in line with, again, your energy, authenticity, and values. And that is not necessarily even applied to work. That could be for your life as well. There is a new program that I am building as well that is for folks with a lot of visibility and influence and responsibility in their life, who have realized that it's a lot and they want to balance it all. And that is called Create Abundance. And that's going to be designed for folks to recapture playfulness and mitigate burnout. I'm very excited about that one. I also have an offering for teams. So if you have a team of 15 people or less, it's going to help you connect and manage pain points and maybe points of disconnect through play, and leverages some of my experience in gamification and improv, and is based on a wellness program that I built and ran in a corporation I used to work at, that was designed to mitigate burnout for property managers working in affordable housing. So I'm excited about that as well.
I am too. And when you say through play, a lot of different things come to mind. What can you give me an example, like your team workshop, for instance? What might that look like?
Yeah, so that is highly customizable as well. So that can be through some improv type games of like checking in with emotions, like emotion type play, or it can be through a role playing type experience that is ongoing or is a one-off type session that is entirely customized. Like it's not a D&D. It's not like it's just where you're stepping into someone new and you're seeing the problems that are going on in your day-to-day just through a different light where you're able to just step outside of yourself. So you are embodying a new perspective on the situation. While also getting to be silly and playful, because the way we learn as kids is through play and through experimentation and through being silly and through laughing. I read recently a statistic that I think was from, I think it was quoted from a TED talk that was called The Power of Smiling, or something like that. I'll have to get you the exact title, but it said children smile over 400 times a day and adults smile less than 20 times a day. And that was staggering, staggering
What?
difference. Yes. And so I would
Dang.
love through this program to sort of change that number a little bit so
Yeah.
that, well, because we play, I feel like we can't quantify and put a dollar value on play, so it's, we are discouraged to do it after a certain age, and we are maybe pushed to do sports and get competitive so that we can then get competitive in the workplace, right? So the playfulness, the creativity is maybe put to the side. Oh, you can have a, you can paint, you can be creative as a hobby. You can maybe do a side hustle, but you got to be really competitive so you can make the big bucks being competitive. And don't be playful. That's silly. And so I feel like we internalize these messages as kids because we see adults doing that. And then, and you know, who's I feel like a lot of multi-potentialite people are really creative, and maybe they grew up like me, wanting to be in some type of entertainer, and we're maybe told by an adult that that's not practical. You can't do that. Nobody makes it in entertainment.
I wanted to be a singer.
Yeah, me too. You want to be a starving artist, and so you don't want to be a starving artist, so you have to go do your practical career path. And so then, we are taught that play, fun, creativity, entertainment, like all that stuff is not viable and not worth our time. And so even having a creative practice on the side that isn't generating any money, it's just generating joy, is hard for folks. And so it's relearning that muscle of like, oh, and assessing conflict or difficulty or like what's going wrong in the cohesiveness of this team through a playful lens, and as we would as children. And then I know like children can experience conflict, there's bullying and stuff that can happen with kids, but a lot of times kids can sort out differences through just figuring it out, laughing about it, and moving on, and being playful. And so I think like relearning that can be really helpful toward moving past issues that maybe like structural or suit issues that have plagued a team for ages. Maybe they were like baked into the structure, and then you have something new that you can work with. You just, you can let a little water wash away part of the sand castle, and then you can rebuild it again, because building sand castles is fun. If you think about it, it's fun.
I think it's fun. I was helping my niece build a sandcastle the other weekend. Wow, I was building the hole for the moat, but she got to do the cool stuff. well, if anyone is interested in connecting with you about these different offerings, where can they reach you?
I am somewhat semi-active on LinkedIn. I am trying to figure out the whole LinkedIn thing. That's the only social media I have. So feel free to connect with me, follow me over there. I love to hear from folks there. Or you can visit me at cultivateyourweirdness.com. And you can set up some time to just chat with me. I love chatting with folks. I love chatting with folks about what they're going through and all the different passions they have. I love learning new things.
Thank you. Well, I like to ask all of our guests if they have a favorite quote. So, C, do you have a favorite quote?
I will share with you something that I like to share with folks who are going through changes, whether they're my clients or not. And it's growth and change are hard, but you can always dance your way through it. Remember, you can't spell discomfort without disco.
I love this. Oh my gosh. I was like, where is this going with the discomfort? And then you go disco, and I'm like, ooh. Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
Thank
Oh,
you.
right on. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I just want you to remember that you are strong and you are worthy of everything that you desire, and you can hear your voice deep inside if you sit with yourself and check in with yourself, and that today can be a great day, even if it seems like a struggle. And I give you full permission to experience joy today, even if things are hard right now. You deserve joy. You deserve rest. You deserve love. And you deserve a life that gives you all those things. And you can create it for yourself.
Thank you, C.
Thank you.